everyone, and welcome to Incredible Critics. Incredible, not because we're great, but much like Zack Snyder's directing, our credibility is seriously in question. I'm Andrew Moore, and joining me today are two very special guests, one new and one you'll be familiar with if you listened to Frankie's Star Wars episodes. Welcome first, Peter Cutbay.
Thank you for having me. I'm the world's biggest Zack Snyder sympathetic supporter, so I'm here to defend his honor.
Ah, well, you're going to have to work at that today, because in the other corner we have Joseph Carrion, a.k.a. Carrion Chuck from the college days.
You had to bring that up, didn't you? But yeah, my whole life motto is defund DC, so that's where I stand currently on things.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have a battle of the Titans tonight, so let's get into it. We are going to be discussing some of the DC Universe in the upcoming episodes, but tonight we're starting with Joe. Want to tell him?
Man of Steel, the famous piece of art that Zack Snyder created in 2013.
Oh boy, and what a treat that was to watch on opening night at the theater with my family. Joe, you joined me for that. And I gotta say, it was a memorable experience, but probably not in the right way.
Yeah, I mean, it was very telling when I think you, myself, and I think a couple of your family members were the only ones who didn't clap leaving the theater. it was different. Going in, there were so many expectations on that movie. You know, DC was expanding their universe. You know, executive producer Christopher Nolan. So I had high expectations for it because I love Christopher Nolan as a director. You know, he did the Dark Knight trilogy. We won't go into that, but just excellent, excellent movies. And, you know, it just kind of let me down. But I don't want to go too deeply into it. I also want to let Pete talk about his experiences when he first saw it as well.
I'm not going to say too much right now, but I just realized that all three of us have seen it in theaters, and we have watched it in different medias as well. So we've all seen it more than once. I've seen it like probably 4 or 5 times. I clapped in the theater. And, you know, majority of people clapped in the theater, Joe. So, you know, I think that says something about you. But you're a hater. Before I start, I want to say I was 18 years old. So I was still young in my movie critic career. But I went there, watched it, and I remember thinking when I left the theater, that was one of the best superhero movies I've ever seen in my life. But I was 18. Look at Joe smile. No, I legitimately, that was a thought that went through my head. I went, wow, that's probably my top 3 favorite superhero movies.
I thought the same thing about Phantom Menace, but we all changed.
That's even worse. That's really bad.
He was also younger.
That's was fair. Nine. Okay, that doesn't count. I was 18. I go buy a pack of cigarettes, and I went in there thinking that was the greatest superhero movie I've ever seen in my life.
One decision followed by another bad decision.
That's right. Cigarettes, alcohol, and for legal reasons, allegedly, we might have been drinking while we were watching that movie as well in the theater. Allegedly.
I wish I had then.
Yeah, we also went to go see Happy Feet 2, and we were pretty allegedly drunk during that too. That was more fun to watch. Man of Steel. But we'll talk about the Happy Feet extended universe later.
Yeah, let's.
Yeah. Anywho, I'll talk about the details real quick. Just skim over some stuff. Man of Steel. I just thought in the theaters, I do appreciate the bold take on it, the character of Superman, because for someone that wasn't familiar with the character, I thought of him as a silly character almost, because again, I'd never seen him in comics. I'd never seen him in cartoons. I just knew of Superman, as everyone does. And I went in there, and Zack Snyder really went, hey, let's make this movie a gut punch. Let's make this movie a statement, like in your face, you know, loud Hans Zimmer, epic punches, crazy camera movements, you know, just over the top action. And I think 18-year-old buzzed off alcohol me, I think that was like a 10 out of 10, you know. just trying not to laugh. But later, I'll just sum it up by saying I don't remember particular moments in the movie when I was in theaters. But I obviously, as I grew older and seen it a couple more times, I started seeing the movie for what it is, per se. And there were some moments that were laughably bad in the film, obviously. I'm not going to stand here and defend every minute of it.
We can go into detail about some of that when we discuss our more recent viewing.
We will. But to sum it up and hand over to Mike to Joe, I'm just going to say that in the theaters, I gave it a 10 out of 10. I remember thinking, this is almost as good as Spider-Man 2. I remember thinking that was an incredible movie. I wish I could have gone back and kicked myself in the face. I'll finish off by saying that. Go ahead, Joe.
Oh, I don't have much else to say, but I mean, Andrew, talk about your experience in the theater with I kind of briefly touched on mine. Tell me about yours.
In my opinion, the basis for why these movies about Superman aren't interesting is Superman himself. I don't find him a very compelling character in that he's not very relatable. And I guess that's kind of the point. Is he supposed to be something that humanity is supposed to strive for? I mean, they kind of beat you over the head with that message in the movie itself, but that's another problem we'll talk about. But just at its core, a movie about Superman is not very appealing because I think he's boring.
That's what I thought this movie was going to do for me, because you know me, I've always my whole life been a Batman fan, and the beauty in Batman is that he's so flawed. That's always pulled me in, and Superman's so perfect. And based on kind of what we saw in some of the trailers, more like when we went to go see The Dark Knight Rises, that first trailer, you saw a little bit of like a struggle. You saw some shots of him on the boat struggling whether he's gonna show himself or save the people. Or I'm sorry, it was on the bus. It was the bus scene. He's kind of struggling with his humanity, his earthly humanity. I wanted to see an imperfect character, but I didn't get that, because I feel like the DC universe has tried so much to paint perfect superheroes. And it's like you said, they're not relatable. And it's a problem. In the Marvel universe, we get superheroes that aren't super all the time. We see them deal with everyday things like we do. And I think that's one of the fundamental flaws of this movie, is just Superman was not relatable. But also on the other aspect of it, Superman's supposed to stand for the best of us, and I didn't feel like Cavill's Superman did that. And it's there's two spectrums you've kind of got to hit. And Superman, he's a tough superhero, because you've got that human aspect of it, you've got the super aspect of it. And I will give Zack Snyder and the DC writers credit. It's tough to do that, especially in modern day. You see, back in the 50s and 60s, Superman was kind of that glimmering piece of hope in the wartime, you know, and it's tough to do a modern day adaptation of him. And I think it's very telling what DC superheroes had the most success the last 30 years.
There is very much an obvious attempt by the filmmakers to create a relatable, flawed character. I can see that there. It just doesn't come across well for a number of reasons. His flaws, his struggles are, you know, he is a flawed character, but unfortunately those flaws aren't things we can relate to as much, like you said. Pete and Joe and I actually rewatched this movie recently, just a couple weeks ago, so we're not just speaking from our years ago theater experience. We revisited it, and Pete, you were about to mention some of this earlier, but there are some pretty nonsensical scenes and lines and dialogue in this movie, but there's also some really incredible moments. And I think that's kind of where Zack Snyder, the director, succeeds, and where his success ends, is creating some of these absolutely visually compelling storytelling moments. He's a great visual storyteller, but once he gets past those moments, he has a hard time tying it all together.
I would just like to, I've been taking mental notes while Joe was saying all that, and there's a few things I'd like to argue with him about. Nothing crazy. So first, I think I want to make a point out of the point you guys made about Superman not being relatable. I think to a degree, if you may agree with me, all superheroes are hard to conceptualize. And see, the thing is, superhero and superpowers are not relatable in their nature. I feel like to me, I can't, one of the characters that I really cannot relate with is Batman. There's very little I can relate to Batman with. I feel like I'll make this crazy comment. I feel like it's easier to relate to having superpowers. It's easier to relate to knowing what it is to feel like to fly than it is to have $100 million. I can't pretend to have $100 million. That's really tough. Okay, I can't pretend to be Bruce Wayne and drive a Lamborghini to a charity event. What I can do is hop on a plane and pretend to fly, look out the window. These are easier things, and the dream of having superpowers. I don't know. That's just me, I guess. Because the beauty in Spider-Man, as you guys know, I'm a huge Spider-Man fan. I think out of both DC and Marvel universes, Spider-Man has the most relatable non-superhero persona out of everyone, right? He's just a broke college kid. I think millions of people fall in that bracket.
I would
Like literally, I don't know, seven people fall into the Bruce Wayne category. Like maybe like Elon Musk, maybe some random Chinese guy. I don't know.
Joe's
Like,
actually sleeping on a couple billion that we just
yeah,
didn't
right. Joe presses a button on his desk, his whole room just. All
know.
right, so I needed to tell you something.
He's like, I
But
don't know what you
anyway,
guys are talking about. Batman's
go
super relatable.
So you say that.
I'm not saying Superman's relatable. He's not. He's one of the most least relatable people. But
So you're saying that superheroes relate to relatability is based on their alter
that's
ego.
a, yeah, absolutely, 100%. If you can't sell me your alter ego, then I can't relate to this person. Because at the end of the day, your average viewer is not going to relate to Batman doing a backflip off of building and flying 2 miles across Gotham. No, who's going to relate to that? Like, you'd have to be a Marine to relate to something like that. You then no, you're going to have a hard time relating to, I guess, they killed off his parents in the comics because they're like, dude, we need something for people to relate to him.
I think as a whole, yes, I would absolutely agree with you, Pete. But I think Batman himself is a bit more nuanced than that, in that his alter ego isn't even his true self.
Oh, brother, that argument. Okay.
Meaning that he has to play a character even when he's Bruce Wayne, and
Yes.
his true nature is actually more so his Batman persona. But even then, like, he's not. And I'm not even really a Batman fanboy by any means, but I enjoy the character more because of that conflicted nature of Batman, of having to balance who he thinks he is and who he's trying to be and who he's pretending to be. And some narratives are better than others and handled better than others. But I've overall enjoy that, and I find it more relatable in that he's human and doesn't have powers. And yeah, he doesn't have he has a $1 million, $1 billion. I don't know what's he worth at this point, Joe.
I relate more with Batman's. Oh yeah, he's worth a lot. I relate more with Batman's issues. Like Superman's issues are like, oh my gosh, do I use my laser beams in public? And Batman's issues are, oh my gosh, do I save Harvey Dent? Do I save Rachel? Do I take my mask off and save the whole city? Like those are things that I probably might have to deal with in my life, choosing someone who lives and who dies, not taking my
Was
mask
literally
off. I
about to
don't mean
say that.
no, not that one, but yeah. So I don't know. It's just some of the struggles are what get me. But I do see what you're saying, Pete. I understand where you're saying that you have to be able to relate to the alter ego. I do get that.
To focus on Man of Steel, we'll discuss the nuances and the essence of what it is to be a relatable superhero. We can go on about that for hours. But to
And
touch
I'm
on
sure
Man of
that
Steel, what's that?
I was just going to say, and I'm sure that will carry on into Batman v Superman and Justice League as we continue this series. Go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, it'll be a greater theme in the background that'll dissolve into nothingness by the time we get to Justice League. But however, let's focus on Man of Steel, at least the one crappy gem in the DC universe so far. There were beautiful moments, like you said, Andrew. I found myself enthralled, even our recent, most recent viewing, I found myself enthralled and emotionally moved at very, very particular scenes, not throughout the whole movie. But I think there was an idea, you know, not to quote the Marvel Universe, but there was an idea. They failed to bring it in the fruition, but I see what they were trying to do, and it was beautiful. I don't know. I just thought I think a lot of, like Thanos said, you know, I think people are treating it too harshly. It was a fun project. Zack Snyder, I think, did a decent job.
I think the problem is the seed of the idea, though, was let's just make this big universe like Marvel. And that caused the issues with Man of Steel. Now, I will admit, Man of Steel, out of the three movies about, is the best.
Yeah, no doubt. Literally, yeah. Not even a shadow of a doubt, yeah.
But, yeah, the problem is the seed of the whole DC universe started with, oh, we got to catch up to Marvel. And Man of Steel is a product of that, I feel.
You know how cool it would have been? We're sitting here in 2020 talking about Batman versus Superman about to come out when there's already been like three or four movies before it. That would have been hype. That would have been beautiful if we had like two Superman movies that were done a little better than Man of Steel or like two standalone Ben Affleck Batmans. You know, then let's talk about, you know, Batman versus Superman. Then it would have had some gravity. You know, 6 hours of stuff to talk about before they finally fight each other. Then there's some substance. We don't need to use Martha crap. We don't need to use crazy, bald, lunatic, you know, young, what's his face? I don't know my DC universe very well.
Lex Luthor.
Yeah. Thank you, Lex Luthor. Is it Luthor or Luthor?
It's Lex Luthor, I believe.
Because in the cartoons, they go, Lex Luthor. They all say Luthor.
They're probably just being a little too pretentious.
Right, as Lex Luthor is. But go on, Andrew, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think we've addressed a lot the basis of a lot of the issues. But let's get down to the movie itself. One of the biggest issues I have with the movie, outside of just the premise itself, like, that notwithstanding, is the pacing. And I think it's an overall issue that Zack Snyder has in the majority of his movies. He has a lot of get up and go, then slow down, get up and go, slow down, get up and go, slow down, where he has like multiple climax moments in the movie where you'd think like, oh, this is going to be like a big payoff section, but why is it here? Oh, well, then it settles down again, and then there's another big section that looks like it's going to be a big payoff in the movie, and then it's not. It was just like a bunch of action and another climactic scene without the emotional payoff for it, and at least it's set up that way, even if that wasn't the intention. And then there's also emotional things that are set up that are at least in Man of Steel, with the flashbacks to his conversations with his dad, are pretty well paced out up until halfway, like through the movie, where there's this climactic emotional moment with his dad. And then it cuts back from that just to regular pace of the movie. And then later when it's coming to like a climax in the movie, instead of going back to an emotional climax with his dad, it goes back to a calm, settled scene. And it's not like this, it doesn't play off well as this like juxtaposition of calm and storm. It's just a very jarring pace change. Again, in my opinion, others may not see it that way, but you have this climactic moment, and then it goes back to his dad just giving him this little piece of advice, but not in the same emotionally gripping way, not in the same emotionally gripping way that you have like with Uncle Ben in Spider-Man, where he's, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. That was one of the things that stood out to me immediately the first time upon seeing it. A lot of potential.
So Ragnarok did the same exact thing.
Yeah, and that's one of the things. What's actually one of the gripes I have about the movie?
Well, I love that scene, by the way, where he goes, "Are you Thor, the God of Hammers?"
I do love the way that Taika Waititi, but we're digressing a little bit because this is about Man of Steel, but I do like the way that the visual and audio cues of flashing back to Odin, I think that was really brilliantly done. But that aside, I think the flashbacks can work. I think they can be emotionally compelling, but the pacing of them was my issue in this movie in particular. There's also a number of dialogue and plot choices that don't make a lot of sense. Hey, these clear war criminals, we're going to send them into a space and time where they'll be safe while the rest of us die with our planet, except for...
Well, that was to show how full of themselves those religious leaders were. They still believed that the planet was fine. You know that, right? Like, those religious leaders were so pompous, or whatever that word is, that they were like...
Pick up on that.
Yeah, they thought it was going to be fine.
Did you pick up on that, Joe?
They were like,
I missed that.
Dudes with the shiny helmets that one of, you know, Zod zaps one of them when he like goes in the sun room. Those dudes were like the religious shamans of that society.
I was probably too enthralled by Zod.
Right, yes. Right. I think they were like prime ministers in a way, but they were like, you know, religious zealots or whatever. And they were like, I guess the Krypton had a different society structure, obviously. I don't know the full inner workings of it. But to me, for what I got from that scene, was those guys were just like, you know, climate change deniers. And they were like, get them out of here. And they're flying, you know, sexually oriented space. I don't want to say the word, but get them in their phallic-shaped spacecrafts.
I remember you mentioning that when we were starting to watch it before we saw the ship.
You don't even believe me.
And I didn't believe you. And then it happened. I didn't either. Oh.
Anybody listening to this, go back and watch that scene. They're literal, you know what, wee-wees.
I mean, I guess if you look at it from like mythology standpoint, like a lot of ancient cultures had a lot of like phallic symbolism, so maybe they were kind of trying to like play off of that kind of stuff. Who knows? But yeah, it was very uncomfortable.
You think Zack Snyder may be upset one of like the, you know, one of the workers on the film that was working on the graphic design and the CGI. He's like,
boys like Little Mermaid back in the day.
Yeah. Oh, just to get back at him. He's like, oh, see what they're saying right there. Never mind. Let's go past that.
So yeah, but, this was my, oh, go ahead.
No, please. I insist.
This was my second time seeing the film a couple weeks ago. And I don't know if I liked it any better, but I tried to go in with an open mind. The things that stuck out to me from the theater were, I thought the opening sequence on Krypton was good. It was fast paced. I thought, is it Michael Shannon who played Zod?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the highlights of the film. I really believed him as Zod. I almost believed what he was trying to sell the high priests, if you will, trying to convince them. And then, you know, after Krypton is when the movie kind of felt like they were slamming the brakes and then slamming the gas, like Andrew said, with pacing. We jumped down to Earth with an older Clark Kent, and he's saving an oil rig, and there's a scene of him with fire around him, and I was like, oh, am I watching 300? You know, it looked like Zack Snyder copied and pasted a background from 300. I didn't really like that. So the flashbacks are okay with me. I much would have preferred a linear kind of story showing Clark growing up, but that's because I like Batman Begins. I like how that was structured. But I thought up until when Clark's dad died, it was okay. And then, like Andrew said, that flashback that really didn't feel like it fit within that part of the story really just threw me off. And I struggled to get back in and be invested in it the rest of the movie. And Lois Lane was a big issue in this movie for me. I didn't understand how she got to some of the places in the movie where she was. Like, she's just exploring.
Well, that's a superpower. You know that, right?
Yeah,
to show up magically wherever Superman is, kind of like Mary Jane with Spider-Man. Yeah. It's that kind of thing.
Like how when Batman versus Superman, they're having the nice climactic, and she's just like, his mom's name is Martha too. Like, dude, stop. Get out of nowhere.
But going back to Man of Steel, my favorite part is Zod and Superman go, you know, into the stratosphere fighting. They land at like some train station or whatever, back in the same city. Basically, Lois is there. Like, literally in 30 seconds.
She teleports.
She was all the way on the other side of the city with like the, you know, the like the fall of buildings over there. Just like that. Dude, I think she's like she won't, what is it called? Supergirl, yeah.
Yeah.
Again,
yeah.
I'm not very fluent in my DC universe.
So. No, you're good. But yeah, like just Lois Lane's placement in some of the parts, like we just said, it really threw me off. Now the one moment that was controversial that I did kind of buy into Superman's character was at the end when he's fighting Zod and he realizes that he's got to save these people who are, they're up against the wall in that shot. He's like, mm-hmm. Well, I got to kill him. And he did. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh wow. So he made a decision. He made a tough decision. And I liked that about him.
See, a lot of people hate that last like 10 minutes of the movie. And I'm kind of on the fence about it.
Yeah.
And Zack Snyder defends it saying, you know, this is what happens when, and a lot of people, I've read a lot of YouTube comments and forums, people defending that scene saying like, this isn't Marvel where just everybody lives and lives happily after, you know, they're saying that right. When two titans and two gods fight in a city, that's what's going to happen. You know, hundreds of thousands of people are going to die. And I don't know if the world was ready yet for a movie like that. And like, that's a lot, especially coming from Iron Man, you know, going, yeah, you know, just like saving everybody and literally nobody dies except like that one old Israeli dude. But
right.
And then you go into this thinking like, you know, oh, Superman, it's really fun. And you see a whole city level, like nuclear destruction, hundreds of thousands of people dead.
Superman's like, I'm going to save the city by destroying it, which I didn't get. But
listen, he tried to get him out of the city, but remember, you got to think like Zod is, I'm trying to play devil's advocate here. Yeah. Zod is just as powerful as him. Zod is his equal in that scene. He's got the same powers, same strength. Arguably, he's stronger than Superman in that scene because he's a military general. And it's tough
to train on a farm.
On a farm! I had to yell at, you know, shout out to Michael Shannon. I know it's tough to defend that scene, but I think people criticize it a little too much. I think it's a 5 out of 10. Except I'm talking about the entire like premise of it and the fight itself. The fight itself visually is stunning, and it's like it's really fun to watch. It's really cool, just because we've never seen that in a movie ever. To that, like nobody's thrown that much money at CGI to get two dudes fighting in a city like that and to make it look that good. Like everything looks 10 out of 10, except the lighting. The lighting sucks. It's all great. It's horrible. But if somebody recolored that, like made it colorful, that would that'd be so good. Man, that'd be like cinema. But that's what Zack Snyder is. He's cinema. You feel horrible after watching it, but you had a good time. You actually enjoyed yourself.
And I'm going to have to cut that part out.
You don't want to admit it to your family or friends. You do not cut that. That's a great analogy. Don't cut that out.
Family-friendly podcast.
All right, I'll describe it as something
I'm
else.
Just messing.
I can redo it. I'll find another comparison.
Yeah, just redo it. It'll be like a reshoot from Justice League.
It's like eating sushi. You know, you don't want to tell anybody you enjoyed it. I don't know. I can't do it. The first analogy was too good.
Say, I love sushi. I'll leave it in there.
I love sushi. That's me. I love Man of Steel. No, you know what? I love Man of Steel. Right now, I got Man of Steel music playing in the background to like get me in the mood to talk about it.
There's
one of
another
the best
good point.
Parts of this movie.
Yes.
Yeah, music is tremendous.
Hans Zimmer brought his A game.
Yeah, can I make a musical comment on the movies?
Absolutely.
And some of comparisons to other Christopher Nolan, Hans Zimmer comparisons. Like you guys said, how you know the movie goes, stops, goes, you know, which is really funny to me that Man of Steel does that, because typically when Hans Zimmer is paired with other directors, pacing and build up to climaxes in the movies is 10 out of 10 typically. Like Dark Knight, for example, you know, the ticking Joker theme that plays like in the background while something's happening, that music might play for like 5 minutes getting the audience ready for like, you know, Rachel, you know. And or Interstellar, when you know the tsunami scene where it's like with the organs,
with the no time
you could go on, or
trying to dock with
you know, Tenet, or you know, when Hans Zimmer did that one, excuse me, I meant to say, yeah, yes, I feel like Hans Zimmer has done well with other directors in regards to pacing and climactic buildup. I'm not sure if it's Zack Snyder's fault that he didn't use Hans Zimmer as other directors have. You know, because at the end of the day, musical composers don't get to write the movie. They just compose the music. And I think Hans Zimmer, I'm listening to this music right now, like Joe said, it's 10 out of 10. And it's like, it's better than any music Marvel's ever thrown in a movie. Like, not Marvel music is just like elevator music compared to this.
Yep.
It's all
time. Even like, it's horrible. It's not horrible. I like the Avengers theme a little bit, and Iron Man's theme is pretty good. But other than that, like the new Spider-Man theme, I freaking hate it. But anyways, but back to Man of Steel. I think I've said my 10 cents about it, at least the pacing and stuff like that.
Yeah, the music was definitely one of the redeeming factors of it. I remember, like I said, watching the trailer and just hearing that Man of Steel theme. It captured my heart. Like and Andrew's known me for a long time. I've always really been kind of a hater on Superman, but hearing that music, I emotionally was captivated by his character. It sucked me in. And there were moments like that in the movie too, where it pulled me in and I wanted to keep going and keep going and keep going. And then Zack Snyder just puts a nice roundhouse boot kick to my face. He's like, all right, get back, get out of here.
Like the scene where a particular scene in Man of Steel, where he's pinned down by the terraforming machine, you know, and he's got to like destroy it. And then the music is swelling up and those people, his friends are about to die from the bugle, the Daily Planet, sorry. The Spider-Man fanboy here.
Hey.
The Daily Planet, and they're about to die, and the music's going, oh, and he's like, he lifts his hand, and it's just like, it's this long shot. What's that called in cinema? Wide shot.
Establishing?
There's this shot? Wide shot. Well, it's not an establishing shot, because the camera in Man of Steel is like got Tourette's. It's like just all over the place. It's not even a real person holding the camera. You know, it's obviously just like CGI camera.
Oh, but, yeah, I know where you're talking about. What shot?
Yeah.
You're talking about. Yeah.
But you know what shot I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. It's from the ground level. It looks like a human being is holding the camera for once. And he's got his hand up like this, and he's like about to stand up, and goosebumps. It's so good. I'm telling you, cinematography and music-wise, you know, storytelling, we could debate about it all day and all night. But cinematography and music and powerful emotional moment-wise, that rivals, that moment at least, rivals anything out of any superhero movie. I know it's a bold claim, but that rivals take... I'm going to get so much crap for the saying this. I think it rivals up with any other superhero moment. But it's just surrounded by... just this vague feeling of
I would say that moment's better than most of the pinnacle moments in Marvel movies, other than maybe
Infinity absolutely War. I mean,
game, but I agree with you,
that moment can rival like Infinity War moments or you know, stuff like that. And that's what I'm saying, it's such a powerful, really really cool moment. And if only somebody had taken the time, you know, sit down in a room maybe over the course go ahead.
It's just, unfortunately, to get me there, mm-hmm. there was so many detours of emotion, and that's what I really struggle with. I just, once we're at the defining moment of that character, I want to have been on a straight and narrow path emotionally, and I wasn't able to.
You know what they should have done? It just popped in my head. They should have came out with a movie called Clark, and just him as a child, you know, like Clarksville kind of thing, but like, not tell anybody that's a superhero movie. So there's this giant like conspiracy going on. Like, is this about Superman? Who else would it be?
I'm kidding.
Yeah, like, yeah, sure. But it's just like, you know, people, and then right at the end of the movie, you show them like running through the cornfields or something at incredible speed or something. Like, so you hint at it all the movie, but at the same time, you show his backstory. You show all those, you know, father son moments of him, you know, struggling with his power.
What was I supposed to do? Just let them die? Yeah,
maybe. Dude, that would have been cut out. I don't know whose idea was to put that in the movie. Maybe? What do you mean maybe? What are you talking about, dude? That sucked me out of the movie first, like, for sure. Joe, I'm right there, sorry, I'm laughing.
But it was honestly stupid. It was still despite it being stupid, it was kind of a more relatable emotional experience, like with his dad, than you ever get really from Superman. Like, if your own kid was at risk of being, you know, if you were at risk of sacrificing your own child you've come to love. I don't know. I know a lot of parents have strong feelings and emotions towards their kids. I'm sure that probably resonated with some people out there.
It was to put gravity on the situation, to show the audience how important it was for Clark to come out of the superhero closet, per se. That was a very horribly phrased, I apologize. But to come out as a superhero to the world, they wanted to drill that in. Like, this is not a small, this is no laughing matter. This needs to be taken. Like, I don't care if it costs the lives of other innocent kids, you know, because the father is basically saying, you shouldn't even be here. You know, the world's not supposed to know you're here. Right. Those kids would have died if you had not come from a spaceship. And, you know, and by the way, yeah, go ahead, Joe.
That was the great thing about the scene where his father died, is his dad is essentially sacrificing himself so that Clark doesn't have to expose who he really is.
Right. That scene was garbage, though. I love Man of Steel, but that scene was trash. Yeah, I'll get into it in a second.
Concept is good. The execution was terrible.
Horrible.
Yeah, I think that's this movie horrible. As a whole, for me, personally. Lots of fantastic concepts. The groundwork was there for finally creating like a Superman story that might be interesting, might be compelling, and it just kind of falls flat in my book.
It just felt so. Let's dive into that scene for a second, because I think it's important. Because sure. I actually watched a YouTube video describing that scene as, like Andrew said, everything that's wrong with Man of Steel. Like, that scene is a really good scene to dive into to explain the rest of the film. First of all, the premise: he gets his leg stuck because he's trying to save a dog.
Like a dog.
Superman, your father died like a dog. It's just funny to me that, like other people brought up, Superman, he could have ran out there, grabbed both of them, and ran somewhere else without anybody noticing because of just how fast Superman is. Oh, I don't know. And there's a tornado going on, like an F5 tornado. Dude, no one's watching you. I promise you. Nobody's watching you. There's a tornado. I don't know. Maybe Midwestern audiences that were watching that movie, like, actually felt the power of that scene. Because a tornado, have you guys been in tornado warnings and stuff? Just being in a warning, not seeing the tornado, just being in a warning in your basement is scary enough. Yeah. You're under a bridge, 100 feet in front of you, there's an F5 tornado. Do you know how loud tornadoes are?
Like
train.
Yeah.
Like, I've dedicated nights of my life on YouTube to watching tornado documentaries, tornado chases, because I have no life, you know? And I'm watching these things. They are incredibly loud, massive, bigger than any building on Earth. They are huge things. And it's right in front of you. You're telling me Clark Kent couldn't have just ran out there, grabbed both of them, and ran back maybe behind the bridge and then walked back behind it. It just, you know, but there's no need in, you know, nitpicking it. The premise was good. You know, his father sacrificed his own life. He put his mouth, you know, what's his name?
I'm sorry. Put his body where his mouth is? Excuse me.
Put his like a dog, you know? And he died like a dog to show us that. I hope everybody's getting the Batman. If you guys
I wasn't trying to defend the overall aspect of how good that scene was. I was just talking about the sacrifice of his dad.
The sacrifice is beautiful.
Good part of how it connected with that earlier flashback.
Because it adds weight to what he says earlier about the kids dying in the river. Because he's like, listen, I'm willing to let those kids die. I'm willing to let myself die. Because this is like huge, you know, a superhuman, like on Earth that could fly and destroy everything. And he must have been the most relaxed parent on Earth, knowing his kid cannot get hurt. Because
Right.
Most parents, it's all they worry about. Oh, yeah, but honey, don't worry. Our son's literally indestructible. Don't worry. He can stay out as late as he wants. But anywho, I think let's get back to the overall premise of the movie. That scene, very confusing but beautiful at heart. So I think that summarizes Man of Steel.
Agreed.
I'll stop rambling on for a minute while you guys talk. Sorry, I went on that scene.
I think that's good, and I think that much like that should have been an emotional climax, I think this should be the climax of our podcast today, and we should probably wrap things up. So with that being said, Pete, what would you rate this movie on a out of 10 scale?
Man of Steel. I just want to say, unfortunately, we can't talk about it for like 5 hours, because I could literally talk about Man of Steel for 5 hours. It's such a beautiful but confusing movie. It's so beautiful. Everybody watching this, before I give my rating, lock yourself in a room by yourself, watch Man of Steel, and you're gonna love it. Trust me. Just that's all I'm gonna say. I'll give it two different ratings because I'm crazy like that. My rating as a amateur film critic and a lover of cinema, it's like a 6.5 out of 10, or like, you know, a 7 out of 10 tops.
Sure.
As a superhero film lover and Zack Snyder lover, it's 10 out of 10. It's just popcorn. It's a popcorn flick, and don't think about it too much. And just that's what Superman was always meant to be. Like you guys were saying, it's war propaganda, kind of like Captain America and stuff like that. At the end of the day, just eat some popcorn, enjoy it's Superman. You know, just don't think about Zack Snyder. You know,
it wasn't so long. With so many boring between the good bits.
Right. And Zack Snyder, I think, missed that idea too. He forgot that it's Superman. Have a good time. You know, I think he wanted to make this his opus magnum or whatever about religion and life and death. And he just went way overboard with it. Anyways, 10 out of 10.
Joe, how about you?
Yeah, as far as like a critical standpoint, I'm not going to give it two ratings because I can't do that. It doesn't deserve two ratings. But I'll give it a 6.5, and the one thing that keeps it over 500 is the soundtrack. That still pulls me into Superman and who he is and what he's trying to do. That's the thing that's frustrating about this movie, is I see the potential with it, but it just, for me, it didn't hit home. I just had higher expectations of it when I saw the trailer in theaters, and it just missed it for me. Like I'll tell you, Pete, there's that, like when he's dealing with the machine at the end, he raises his fist. That was a great scene. I'm one of the few people I like the scene with Zod where he snaps his neck. I like that Zod, what I thought was a good villain, but you know, script. There's some script issues, like the end when that chick is like, "Oh, I just think he's hot." But,
I like that scene. I love that scene. It has Martian Manhunter, so that even adds more depth to it.
Yeah. I know. But yeah, I don't know. It just the in and out of being emotionally connected was tough.
I just realized something upon you saying that. I think that Zod snapping neck moment, I think it should have been bigger. Instead of saving 7 people, I think it should have been like, I'm just imagining a scene in my head. Maybe they're both on a crashing spaceship that has the bomb that inverts like time and that could destroy the whole city. And Superman has to make a decision whether to kill Zod and destroy the ship or let Krypton live. And it's like this crazy, like he's about to destroy the city. I think that would have been much, much, much better. Because instead of 7 people, well, I mean, he does obviously by killing Zod, he saves the rest of the city. But I think they should have Zack Snyder that scene even more, but yeah,
make the stakes bigger, maybe.
Struggles, yeah, make the stakes even bigger, at least visually. Yep. I don't know who those people are. What if that kid's annoying? You know, like, who knows?
I think that the attempt was to try to make it more personal by having fewer people, but yeah. And I guess for my
that doesn't out of work when I don't know who they are.
Fair enough. I guess for my out of 10 scale, I'd have to pretty much 100% agree with you on this one, Joe. Great concepts. I mean, as a whole, this is my thoughts on Zack Snyder in general. As a whole, great concepts, has some great visual storytelling moments in his movies, even scenes maybe, but the rest of it tends to fall apart in between those moments, in between those scenes. And you just can't make a movie like that.
You can, apparently.
You can't make a good movie like you can't make a great movie like that. The best it can be is good, and it's a good enough movie. I wouldn't watch it again, but
so
it's good enough.
Do you think DC really pushed the executive producer Christopher Nolan to? Because they knew it was going to kind of fall flat.
Nah, I think it's one of the clout. Okay. That Christopher Nolan clout, you know, just that, like, yeah, we got Christopher Nolan. Yeah,
like let's suck in all the Nolan fanboys to at least buy tickets and watch.
Yeah, right. I don't think that. I really thought that they thought that this movie was going to like crush it. And it kind of did. Like, among, like, certain, like, fan group, it kind
of... As far as opening weekends, it had one of the biggest since the first Avengers.
$668 million in the box office. It's not bad.
Wow. Yeah, second highest opening weekend of that year since Fast and Furious. It almost beat Fast and Furious.
I think it was the movie of that year, like, anticipation-wise.
Yeah.
Yeah, it brought in a crap ton of money, and then they gave us Batman vs. Superman. So,
go to the that's a good segue into next week, Pete. So, thank you, everybody, for listening today. If you want to let us know what you think of Man of Steel, be sure to hit us up on Twitter at 3CriticsPod, Instagram at Incredible Critics, Facebook.com/IncredibleCritics, and leave a review on iTunes, and let us know what you thought of today's episode and how much you miss Frankie. He wanted to be here, but sadly, not this time. Maybe next time. But Pete,
I will find him.
I will find him! Sorry, go ahead. Yeah, thanks for joining us, sir.
We'll let the music fade out in 3, 2... The best thing about that movie, the most enjoyable thing for me aside from the music, was Michael Shannon's overacting. It was perfect.
We didn't talk about that enough.
Yeah, he was the best part of the movie.
He's the best DC villain, period.
Yes. Hard carried it on his back.
He carried that movie on his
back. MJ's that movie.
Yeah. He stole every scene he was in.